Carol.
Oh. Well, you remember I made the painting Secret Fire, and I thought that it related to this book. And then when we got to the part about the treasure house, I felt a departure. You know, I felt that I wanted the myth I felt inside of me wanted to depart from what he was saying at that point. And then a painting arose, really all in one piece. And I don't know if all of you remember my painting in the Slot Canyon of the figure that seems to be made of light, and there's a bear at the bottom. I don't know if you remember that one. But this is what came up next for me, was a similar figure. And this is just a drawing of the masses that I use before I paint. And here's that figure again, and this is inside a Slot Canyon. And here she seems, the negative shapes of the rock make a sort of container or vase that she seems to be part of her. And here is an opening, and in the opening there's going to be sort of a vapor or essence coming out of there. And it'll be in the shape of a tree. Because I felt the need to continue with the theme of the tree. In the previous painting, Secret Fire, there's a tree of fire. And now here there will be a tree of air. And it seems to continue that idea of the four elements through the symbol of the tree. So here will be the tree of the air, and yet it'll be coming up. See, here she's actually the earth and part of the earth. And this tree of air will be coming up from her own essence, and yet there'll be some sort of a circulation, because indeed she seems to be pouring also, you know, as sort of an Aquarius kind of figure. So in my fantasy, that is what I would put in the next step of the building of the treasure house, as opposed to what Aquinas ends up talking about.
Is this kind of like a vision of yours, or a dream, or?
It was a spontaneous visualization. So I was looking at shapes. Oh, I like these canyons a lot, because symbolically for me, they symbolize the heart of the earth, some sort of interior, spiritual interior or essence of the earth.
They're also very feminine.
Mm-hmm. They're very sensuous in their shapes. And I was looking at those shapes, and then I had this spontaneous visualization of this whole setup. It came all at once. So some of the paintings don't come like that. Some of them come in pieces and get built like, you know, blocks as I add each piece, but this one came all at once, which is how the previous portrait of this, if you want to call it a Sophia figure, came, the other one came all at once also. So anyway, that's my fantasy of diverging from Thomas Simmons.
I will look forward to it. How big is it going to be? That size or bigger?
It's going to be about 24 by...
So about twice that size, huh?
What is that? Yeah, maybe three times that
size. Three times that size. Mm-hmm.
Can you cast that on us?
Sure.
Let's see it closer.
I just think it's so interesting to see how the unconscious reacts. And you know, his vision certainly is not the last word. And I think this is the coming out of the same source, so... We'll see how your unconscious changes the material and try to understand that, if you folks are interested, to compare his vision and that vision and figure out where are we.
Well, I feel like there are four trees coming. First the fire, then the air, which is this one,
mm-hmm.
and then a water, and then an earth.
Hmm.
So I feel there are four tree paintings mm-hmm. coming.
You might even add a fifth one of spirit.
Well,
I guess I really don't add anything.
Well, I was just thinking, though, about a pentagram is actually your earth, air, fire, and water, and the fifth point atop is spirit, which is supposed to be a combination of all.
It's the quintessence.
It's the abundance.
Okay. Yeah, that would fit nicely.
See what the unconscious wants to do.
I don't really try to bully it.
Yeah.
I just
true. Just let it speak.
I'm having too much fun with
this. Hey, there's a good bumper sticker. I'm having too much fun listening.
Religious, but not
Well, this is where the unconscious took me. He had the vision of a treasure house. And
it feels like it's a collective. It feels like we're part of that for me.
What you mean?
The treasure house is a collective treasure house for humanity.
Yeah.
Oh, definitely.
Yeah.
And that sort of goes along with the theme of Aquarius and the common man coming to the fore.
Thank you.
Did you guys take a look at it?
Let's see. Thank you. Thank you again, Carol. Really look forward to that. So we talked about Joel, quote from Joel, and then the next point where I got a little messed up last time. I got messed up a couple places. Origin identifies. It's about halfway down the paragraph after the quote on 363. The black bride of the Song of Songs with Miriam, the second wife of Moses, and also with Marian, are overshadowing by God. I finally figured out that there were three figures there. I was thinking it meant with Miriam, the second wife of Moses, qualifying Miriam, but it doesn't. It's three different figures. And in, it's not really important, I'll just mention it real quickly. In some interpretations, Moses has two wives. In one case, one place in the Bible, she's referred to as Zipporah. Another place, she's referred to as the Ethiopian woman. You know, you get all of this stuff about how do you translate these words. And some people say, well, they're the same. Other people say, no, he was a polygamist. Who knows? Who cares, really? But that's what the text refers to, is that he had, in that interpreter's mind, two wives. So just that was a detail that that threw me, and I wanted to clarify that. Now came the bit which really got me and us messed up. In alchemy, the black woman is an embodiment of the negredo. Now, that's no big deal. Of the umber solis, that got a little confusing, or of the new moon darkened by the sun, that got us really confused. A motif, the psychological significance of which is discussed by Jung. I don't think it's too difficult to understand how the black woman is the negredo. Right. I'm going to come back to the umber solis. The new moon darkened by the sun makes no literal sense because it's symbolic. It's an alchemy. And I found that reference. So that's where I was trying to explain it literally. In alchemy, there's a text, the title isn't important, but I'll mention it. Epistola solis ad lunum crescentum. Sol says, if you do me no hurt, O moon, Jesus and Luna has promised him complete disillusion while she herself coagulates, becomes firm, and is clothed with his blackness. It's from Mysterium Trinitionis, paragraph 172. So what all that is there's an alchemical reference in a text whereby the moon is cloaked with the sun's blackness. And what that would refer to psychologically is just the whole darkness theme of the Shulamite. And again, I don't worry about this if you're, you know, only if you're really interested in the symbolism is why I'm mentioning it. But I think the basic point that they're trying to make there is that the darkness is an active principle. We think of darkness as an absence of light, but they think of it as an active condition, just as active as the light. And that's, you know, in keeping with the power of a depression to box your ears. And the other, I just brought along a picture of the shadow of the sun. This is the umbra solis. They saw the shadow as also a substance, not just an absence of light. So that's how the umbra solis is not just where the sun is casting a shadow. That shadow is a piece of the sun in the alchemical mind. All of this is very symbolic thinking, and don't worry about the details of the symbolism, but the common element is that darkness is an active principle. And I also wanted to clarify where I left you a little confused last time.
So this shadow is a thing.
That shadow is a thing.
It's not an effect of this being between.
Exactly.
It's actually a thing.
So the earth, you see, the earth is between the sun and the sun's shadow, not the earth is casting the shadow of the sun. That's the difference. And you see then how it affects the moon. It's really close to the moon, so that the moon is affected by the reality, in their mind, of the sun's shadow. All of this is just, again, very symbolic thinking, but what's so relevant for us is we know from our work that depression isn't just an absence of happiness. It's a fundamental force with reality and intention of its own. And Jung then goes to these symbolic thinkers who saw the same thing on a different level, but they too are talking about the life of that dark thing. That's the point. So that's where we left off. Okay, 364.
Could you just say again how the moon is affected by the sun's shadow? What was the significance there? The moon is as a symbol of Sophia, or? Is an embodiment.
Yeah, the Shulamite is like the dark moon.
So the sun's shadow darkens the new moon.
The sun's shadow covering the moon is the new moon.
I was trying to speak in terms of the shadow being a separate, or a thing in itself, I guess. I can't
think. Let me see if I can intuit where you're going. That the Shulamite, basic idea, Shulamite is black. That means that the Shulamite is, has been turned black by the patriarchal focus, by the patriarchal focus consciousness, on the one hand. On the other hand, she is also a force of her own. That darkness is a power, you said thing. It's, you know, it's, if you realize how we're using the word thing, it's a substance, it's an essence, it's an existence of its own. It's every bit as much a life to be reckoned with as is the sun. And it's darkened it's darkened for many different interpretations for different reasons. One of those reasons is that it's cloaked in the shadow of the sun, which would mean psychologically that the darkness of the moon is trying to get us to deal with the shadow of patriarchal consciousness.
So is the sun's purpose is to illumine and lighten up things,
right.
But the shadow's purpose is to go underneath and see what's under?
Well, if you go to our little vignette, the series of dreams, that those first couple of dreams, you see, I was being very solar with him. And then when it came time to stop being solar, when we saw the cows in the mountains and we saw the woman showing him the way, I stopped being solar.
Became lunar.
Right. Now, had I continued in my solar approach, his unconscious would have gotten negative.
So then the moon affected by the reality of the sun shadow, that is a lunar, a feeling affectation.
Yes. Mm-hmm. But there's a duality here. On the one hand, the moon is made, the shulamite is made black by too much sun. Mm. On the other hand, she knows that there's too much sunness in the sun, and that the sun can be a destructive principle, and she turns negative to tell you that. So she is not only caused by the sun, she has an effect when she becomes active to mute the sun. That's what they're trying to get at. It sounds so weird, but you can see that actual case. Sometimes you have to be solar and sometimes you have to be lunar. And sometimes you need to sweep away the darkness, and sometimes you need to say, no, you sit and be dark. Had I said to that guy at the beginning, oh, you're depressed, you sit in that depression, he'd be dead. So their solar was very necessary. With some other, let's say, type A executive who gets depressed, I might say, well, you know, you stop going out to the movies every night and you sit home and you journal your bad feelings. See, that would be starting with a lunar approach. What the Shulamite is an effect of 1,000 years of focused attention has burnt and truncated the spontaneous activity of the feminine psyche. So that's why she's black. And at the same time, she has the intent of changing that focused sun. So she's not just an effect of the sun, she's an active power now against the sun. And that's the meaning of the black in this story. So damn complicated. Mm-hmm. You know, to really help somebody grow, you have to be so aware of all these nuances.
I'd make it a little more complicated.
Sure.
What role does the earth play in this? You say the earth is between the sun and the sun's shadow.
Hmm. The way I believe their mind is working, and this is my conjecture, is that they see the earth not as causing that shadow, but caught between the two principles. So that life on earth is being caught between the light and the dark.
So wouldn't talking about the earth be talking about the new paradigm? If you have the situation and suddenly you start talking about the earth, then in a way you're talking about the new paradigm, aren't you? Because
Right.
It's the idea of
once we got to the moon, then we could turn around and see the Earth, and we saw it for the first time.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think what the new paradigm is the unio corporalis. It's taking the Earth and reanimating it. In the dream, it would be the cows in the mountains and the woman leading the way. See how nature is reanimated. And in this vision, the Christian position would be Christianity is one huge unio mentalis. Christendom is one huge unio mentalis. And his vision is an attempt to move that from a unio, to move Christendom from a unio mentalis to a unio corporalis, which means the Earth is taken seriously. Well, you could say, doesn't the unio mentalis take Earth seriously? Yes, but as a vis-a-vis. And then the unio corporalis, the Earth is taken as a partner, which if you just think ecologically, how relevant that is, that we begin to see the Earth as a partner. But industrially, we take her as an object. So you can see a bridge from the text to both personal analysis and cultural attitudes. Okay? Did that answer your question?
I'll have to.
I think the difference, as I get it, is that the Earth is between the two. That would be the next paradigm. Whereas the Christian idea would be that the Earth and the Sun are together, and the shadow is the result.
Right.
But they see the Earth, the alchemists, because they're operating from the compensatory position, see the Earth and the Sun, Sun and the shadow as two equally active bodies, principles. And the Earth is caught between the two, which would mean an awareness of the shadow as an independent principle. Not an absence of good, but an independent principle. Okay, 364. For there was darkness over it, because I stick fast in the mire of the deep, and my substance is not disclosed. Wherefore, out of the depths I have cried. That just means the meaning in the experience is asking to be recognized. Now, you could say, you know, where was that in the dream series? What was crying out of the depths? I mean, it doesn't show up that way in the dream, but you can make a link. That would be the head of the snake. The difference between the snake and the head of the snake. The feelings of rage and resentment, and the meaning in that, which was to increase his self-knowledge about his inflation and his unprincipled ambition, and his naivete. I go to the next one. Attend and see me. If any shall find one like unto me, I will give into his hand the morning star. For behold, in my bed by night, I sought one to comfort me, and I found none. I called, and there was none to answer me. That's just more of the Shulamite crying out for recognition. Now things change. This is the beginning of the change. A new figure speaks. Although it's mishmash in the text, she wants us to realize a new voice has come in, though it's not separated in the vision. Therefore will I arise and go into the city. let's just stop there. 364. The second quote. There's a dash, and then it says, therefore. So it's a new person speaking. See, that's the bridegroom. Always keep in mind, and if you forget, go back and reread the outline, the back of the study guide, of the story of Song of Song. That's why I spent some time on it last week, because it's going to be woven right in here. Those two figures in the Song of Songs are going to be speaking here in much the same way they did there, but they'll be meaning soul and body. Meaning and body. So I'll read. Let's go slowly now for some of this. In moving words, the anima cries out for help. That's what we just did, the Shulamite. But in the sentence that immediately follows, therefore will I arise, it is the bridegroom speaking. And he is the buried one who seeks a virgin to deliver him. The transition from one speaker to the other is barely perceptible, so that one is inclined to think that it is the same figure speaking now as a woman and now as a man. Skip a little bit. One has the impression that the author, having achieved direct contact with the unconscious, is letting the voices speak just as he hears them. Okay, I skip down to the quote. Seeking, I arise going to the city, seeking in the streets and broadways a chaste virgin to espouse, comely in face, more comely in body, most comely in her garments, that she may roll back the stone from the door of my sepulcher. Now that's really important. See, he is in the position of the crucified Christ. So the body is dead and is asking to be reanimated. Now, by body there, I think you could mean the emotions, the chaos, the physical desires of the body. In the dream series, and hopefully that's going to be useful to you, that would be the dead snake. And that would be the reanimated dead snake would be the cows in the mountains. So that the body, remember, we can mean that literally or we can mean that as a metaphor. Literally, in that these states of mind, desires and emotions come out of bodily instincts, has become active, just like in those dreams, the cows moved into the mountains apart from the intent of the dreamer's ego. It's like Carol says, I don't, you say, I don't determine what. How many there are?
I said I didn't have any real say in that.
I don't have any real say in it. See, the unconscious takes the lead, and that's what we're seeing in this case, in this male. So the male partner, it now appears, is the alchemical body or corpse that has to be reanimated. So this is the unio corporalis. We're going to be following this now through the rest of the chapter. So that's why I went into the Song of Songs text and why I tried to give you those dreams, that we now have a couple of frames of reference. And I so much want you just to let that image of the cows in the mountains work on you. How the unconscious wants to evolve the natural world receiving reanimation. So it first will lead you away and then back. And she refers to a particular text. The corpse cries out, "Where is the living soul that has separated from me? Awash me that I may become a shining house for the spirit and the purified soul." And give me wings, the next bottom of the page, give me wings like a dove. That would be the soul reanimating the body.
Soul what?
Reanimating the body.
Reanimating.
Or, in the dream, the cows in the mountains. Where emotions and feelings and desires had to be excluded, now they can be re-experienced because they will have changed. And where before they would have deceived you, here they can be trusted. You can see how the pop psych of thing of do what you feel is so dangerous. Sometimes that's reliable, and sometimes your feelings are shaped by a complex that's not in touch with reality. And I will fly with her into heaven and then say, I live forever, and will rest in her. For the queen stood on my right hand in gilded clothing, surrounded with variety. We'll come back on page 370. We'll come back to the business of where she stands. But for the moment, she just says pretty much what I've already said on 365. We can now understand why the bride gives her lover wings like a dove. She endows the body with her own volatility. Thank you. Her own volatility, so that it can fly with her into heaven. So now the dialogue we saw in the Song of Songs is going to take place, and it's about the body becoming recharged with life. Hearken therefore, O daughter, and see and incline thine ear to my prayer. Now that's the body speaking. For I have desired thy beauty with all the desire of my heart. I spoke with my tongue, make known to me my end and what is the number of my days. That I may know what is wanting to me. For thou hast made all my days measurable, and my substance is as nothing before thee. And she says, it is evident from these words that the man really does represent the body, the glorified body. Only through the soul can he attain eternal life. Now, do you know what they mean by glorified body?
Well, it's supposed to be purified.
Yeah, I think it's a reference to the transfigured Christ.
Mm-hmm.
But see, the alchemist did that in the retort. And what that would mean is that when the meaning and the soul and the understanding goes back and reanimates the emotions, the text uses that sacred imagery to say that is the deeper meaning of making the flesh sacred. So that when you are first separating from yourself and then reuniting with yourself, you are living out the resurrection of Christ.
Okay, separating from self.
Separating from these emotions.
From
the emotions and the desires.
Instincts,
yeah.
Okay.
And then you are reuniting with them.
Okay.
The text uses the language that's applied to the resurrection of Christ. And that's what the next step in religious consciousness is about. It's withdrawing the projection of glorifying the body from Christ and doing it to your own life. And I think that's the implication here.
Can you say that again?
I think the implication here is that the next step in the evolution of religious consciousness is going to be withdrawing the projection from the resurrected Christ into ourself, which means that we reanimate our own desires through understanding. And that's the next level of understanding what risen Christ means. I believe that's not said here, but I believe that's the implication. That they use that religious language for this otherwise secular-looking project of going back to what you have left and bringing it back to life again.
So it's the projection of our emotions and our desires onto the risen Christ. What are we projecting?
What we're projecting is the making of our own physical desires and emotions sacred after the period of becoming conscious of them. That the body to be resurrected is our own physical relationship to our desires, instincts, and emotions. I hear the bell. We made it as far as 365. But we laid some groundwork, which hopefully will pay off. First in the Song of Songs, keep that in mind, and in that vignette of the dreams. Hopefully that's useful for you. And we might get up to 375 next time.
We don't have any more, do we?
Hmm?
In the fall.
In the fall.
Yeah.
We'll do some review. But, if, you know, it's really not that. If you just remember the basic model, there was chaos, understanding, and now we're bringing them together. Trying to. Have a nice summer.
You too.